I'm Midnight Agent Raw.
And I'm Okame.
We are the Super Media Bros Podcast, and we are founding members of the Odd Pods Media Network. Bronson's loose again.
They killed the Giggler, man.
Pissed off hi-hats.
All that and more.
Heard your friend Wiley's coming.
Super Media Bros.
Just keeps coming back for more.
And so do the women.
It's got to be the fucking cologne. There's no goddamn way.
I mean, how else do you score three hot chicks in three movies?
By brandishing a big fucking gun.
Bronshing.
Yeah, Bronson. Welcome to episode 154 of the Super Media Bros Podcast. I'm Midnight Agent Raw.
And I'm Okame.
Death Wish Month rolls forth with Cult Cinema Showdown 64.
Yeah, with the second and the third one.
Yeah, it's like a battle of the... Which one had the better mustache? I don't know. Do you know?
Which mustache tickled their fancy?
Yeah, we'll find out by the end of this one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the battle of the two sequels following the first one, obviously, but Michael Winner, the director of the first one, has returned for both of these films.
For two winners.
That's right. But we're here to see which one is going to go on to face the winner of 4 vs. 5. So let's fucking get into it, because both of these films are drastically different from each other.
I'm just getting confused with the so many winner like references here. Who's going to win? Who's going to win the winner?
It's like the epic rap battles of history.
Michael Winner versus Michael Winner.
Who wins? Who doesn't win?
You will make the winner.
You make the winner. All right, dude, let's get into Death Wish 2, shall we?
Sure.
1982. Obviously, the first one was 1974. 1982, so... years after the fact, 8 years. But in the movie, I did notice they said it was like 4 years after the events of the first film. So Paul Kersey, back again, he's basically managed to move on with his life, and he's in Los Angeles. Somehow we skipped over Chicago.
Yeah, where he ended up in the first film.
Yeah, so he's like, oh, fuck Chicago. I'm going to LA, where there's probably even more fucking violence.
Especially, you think New York and Chicago were bad?
Let's go to Los Angeles, baby.
Yeah.
Where he's dating a radio reporter.
Who's very British.
I'm not even going to speculate where the accent's from. I just thought it was hilarious because when she opens her mouth, it's like, oh, I was not expecting that whatsoever.
Mm-mm.
So anyway, they pick Carol up. Carol is in the mental institution in Los Angeles. And I guess this is where we find out why he moved to LA.
Yeah, she got transferred there. Basically, they needed to change the scenery because New York was just too traumatizing for her, I guess.
Oh boy. Fuck, dude. Let's just get this out of the way. This is even more traumatizing.
Shit.
So Paul Kersey has a housemaid, and he's got a nice fucking house. He's dating Jerry, and they're out walking with the daughter Carol at some kind of park or whatever. And yeah, it's like a little fairground or something.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, like his wallet gets stolen because he's going to go get ice cream or whatever, and Paul gets his wallet stolen by these five motherfuckers, including Lawrence Fishburne, which again. Another actor that started out, because we were talking about this before we started recording, like another actor that started out, or not really started out, but this has a role in this franchise that absolutely goes on to do bigger shit.
Right.
He's the only one that's really recognizable of the whole, what was his name? It's like Cutter.
Cutter, yeah.
Yeah. And they all have some weird names. It's Nirvana, Punk Cut, Stomper, Cutter, and Jiver. What a winning combo. But he chases them, and then remember he corners Jiver in the alley, and he throws his knife over the fence. He's just like, ah, fuck you, and just eats it over the fence.
It's not fazed by him at all.
No. I mean, Charles Bronson's knees are still good in this movie, so we'll get to that reason later. But his knees are still good in this movie. He can, you know...
maneuver.
Can maneuver quite well. But anyway, the gang members take his wallet, find his address, and you already know where this is going. More senseless beating and raping. It seems to be a fucking nasty ass theme throughout this fucking series.
Pretty much.
And so they beat and kill the maid. And then they just kidnap Carol, where they've tortured her basically to the point where Paul had come home and they knock him out, right? And he just sleeps all fucking day. I want to sleep that good.
And then Jerry tries to get a hold of him and he just happens to wake up at the right moment.
Funny how that works, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's his alarm clock. Let's just say that Paul Kersey lived to 2021. He doesn't use regular alarm clocks on cell phones. He uses the sound of a fucking door knock.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only thing that's going to wake him. He's like, oh, fuck.
Time to get him.
Who the fuck is it?
Time to get slaying.
Right? It's like the sound of ding, ding, that don't work. He's old.
Mm-hmm.
He's just fucking door knocking.
I'm a traditional man.
These goddamn kids again. But anyway, he wakes up, doesn't know what the fuck's going on, but he doesn't identify the attackers. That's one thing that I did notice. He doesn't identify them. And that's just so he can get them. He doesn't want the fucking police going after him because they didn't do shit last time this happened. And then he finds out what happened to his daughter because that one detective shows up. But we're going to tell you what happened. Your face was fucking priceless, dude.
I was not expecting just how drastic of a turn that would have taken, but... So they had their way with her in this little parking garage warehouse looking place. And she plays dumb. I mean, she obviously just, makes no attempt to resist basically. But as soon as they break away, she takes off. They all chase after her. And she launches herself out the window that's next to her. And man, just freaking impales her ass straight through the gut on a fence down below. And I'm just holy shit.
Yeah, because the way they edit it, you think, well, she's going to land in some bushes, but then they zoom out and you just hear, whop, and she's just fucking hanging there.
Yeah, she's like a freaking Halloween decoration at this point.
Yeah, it's fucking bad. Anyway, they tell him that she's dead. And he's just, at this point, Paul Kersey's just like, you know what, fuck these motherfuckers. So, at some point after her funeral, he gets his fucking Beretta. He changes guns. I've noticed this. He changes his fucking gun through each film. So he's just got this fucking Beretta Model 84 and decides, you know what? I'm going to change my clothes and I'm going to go to the dingiest fucking part of town that I can think. I'm just going to rent this, what was it, $50 a month or some shit?
I don't remember, but it was cheap shit.
He's he was like, oh, no TV, no music or whatever.
No loud parties or, whatever, loud noises and shit. Basically.
Because let me tell you, Charles Bronson's going to have a hell of a fucking party.
Yeah, with his fucking milk.
He's going to break out his milk and his fucking Old Spice and Stetson and just have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, we've added a third cologne to the mix because, goddammit, this is Los Angeles. This is Versace country, okay? So now we've got three fucking choices of cologne to choose from as to how he's going to deal vengeance and justice. I really think that he went the full fucking Versace route with this one.
Mm-hmm.
So he guns these fuckers down one at a time, obviously. But I think the one scene that cracked me up the most was when he chases the motherfucker to that little basement area. He shoots this one dude, tells the others to leave, and he walks up. I think it's Stomper.
Yeah.
You believe in Jesus? I was like, well, yeah, because he sees this big-ass cross on his neck. You're going to meet him.
Mm-hmm.
He just blows his ass away. And in this one, he's not even really wildly shooting around people. He's actually specifically going for the people that did this.
Yeah, unlike the first film where he just completely ignores the guys that actually committed the crime. He just kills random muggers. This one, he's targeting specific people.
Right. And in this one, the LAPD kind of suspects that he's the New York Police Department's dude that got away, from the first film. And they're just like, you know what? We need to call them. Let's get Frank Achua. Yeah, let's get Ebenezer Scrooge in on this fucking case. Make sure you got a lot of fucking handkerchiefs. Make sure you got a lot of Kleenex for this guy because he's going to need it.
Do need some Claritin at this point.
I was wondering how he's not had some kind of respiratory failure at this point.
It's like COPD or something. He can barely breathe at the time.
That's all the cologne.
Yeah. He's just suffocating. This justice is thick.
It's just thick. Two C's.
Yeah. The C's of a cologne.
Right. But no, Ochoa thinks that when Paul gets caught, it's going to reveal everything about them releasing him. And then the NYPD is going to get they're going to get up shit creek without a fucking paddle at this point because they fucked up and let this dude go and never arrested him. So they send him out there to keep an eye on him, which the way that he tails him in this movie is fucking hilarious. He's just It's like eating food and like hiding out in fucking taxis, watching them. And he's just like, his little fucking binoculars. He's like, I still love this man. Mm-hmm. Still like that mustache.
But he's not wearing my Stetson.
Why? He smells good. But it's not Stetson. What the fuck is this Hollywood bullshit?
Never gets an opportunity to smell a random part of clothing or fabric with blood on it either.
No, I was kind of sad for our boy.
I think that's why he was just like, he was sniffling more than he was actually like.
Oh, so you think he was like, you know, crying, like holding some tears back maybe.
That New York like hardball pride, I guess.
He's like, Frank, are you okay? Nah, man. Something in my eyes.
Justice.
Yeah, I got justice in my eyes. But this whole time that that's happening, like, because he goes and meets with Jerry, but he tells her basically that Paul is this fucking vigilante, and she questions him on it, and he's just like, no, you're crazy? No. Come on, dude.
Yeah, and he talks his way out of it pretty well. He explains, like, they pretty much profiled everybody who had the same incident happen to them within a certain amount of time, and they basically badgered him until they assumed he did it, which I was like, that actually does work technically.
Yeah.
So smart boy.
Yeah. And then he follows him. Ocho finally follows Paul Kersey to this fucking, like, I don't know. Cause Paul's like hunting these guys down one by one. He's already killed two of them. Then he finds the final three at some kind of like park area. It's funny how it's always a park.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he finds them at this park and they're just dancing and shit. But I don't know how they don't recognize him the whole time. Cause they saw him. They have his fucking driver's license. They know what this guy looks like.
Yeah, but you have to think, like, they go through so many people and muggings in, like, day or two. They probably done forgot, like, who the fuck this person is.
He's got an unforgettable face. It's that mustache, dude. That fucking scalded dog look the whole fucking time.
Desiccated bulldog.
Yeah, he's...
As one of the reviews for this movie was...
Dude, oh my God.
The fucking what, desiccated bulldog.
What if that's how he spoke? They're just like, Paul. Just his jowls. His fucking cheeks.
The sadness takes its toll on every film, so just jowls get deeper and deeper and heavier.
He just... like, that's how he cries.
That's his angry noise, his angry cry. What's he doing? He's getting mad.
Any fucking way. Because remember, he follows them all, and Ochoa gets shot, because there's a fucking shootout, because they're going to buy more... guns and shit. They're trading their drugs for guns and giant shootout. Ochoa gets fucking killed and basically tells Kersey to get these sons of bitches. Cause dude, when Lawrence Fishburne's character gets fucking killed, holy shit. He shoots him right through that fucking boombox. I don't know why he thought that was going to protect him from anything.
Also, let's not forget how Ochoa tells the taxi driver to sit still. He's like, here's $50. Here's half of it. You'll get the other half if you stay still. And he literally rips the damn 50 in half.
Right, and the cabbie's just looking at it like, are you fucking kidding me? And it's like, Ocho's just like, nah, use some tape. It'll be all right.
In New York, everybody uses tape.
Yeah, money's good everywhere. Just use some scotch tape.
Yeah, it was just fucking funny how Bronson was following them, and then Ocho was following Bronson. I was just like wondering if somebody was following Ocho.
Probably like his boss.
Yeah, making sure he was doing his shit.
Yeah, and then his boss's boss. It's like, who watches the Watchmen here?
Did Frank rip up that 50? Oh, yeah, he did. Good job, Frank.
Good job, Frank. God, then he did fucking turns around to his superior. That was a good job, wasn't it? He ripped up the petty cash.
Yeah.
That was supposed to go back into the fucking bank.
That was supposed to be everybody's bonus next year.
$50 for the whole precinct.
Exactly.
Only $50? Well, $50 was a lot of fucking money back in 1982.
It's a gas for all the calls.
We got you guys covered. We doing a whole benefits rehash this year. Full take of gas for everybody that you could just follow whoever the fuck you want to follow around.
Also, they all get like a white elephant Christmas gift and it's all scotch tape. We know how y'all operate in New York, so here you go.
We know you've been ripping your money in half trying to double it up, but that's not how it works here. You got to use the scotch tape or it's not going to pass.
Also, the cabbies are catching on to what you're doing, so they're not stupid, okay?
God damn it, that poor bastard. He fucking drives off, though. The cabbie just leaves. I don't blame him, though.
I mean, if you hear gunshots, come on. You ain't going to stick around.
Right.
Not for no half of 50.
Let's talk about whenever he shoots the dude in the car that's getting away and how he was just, like, slumped over and the car just kind of slowly creeps up and then it just revs full force, flies off this fucking cliff and just...
You're talking about drug dealing Elton John?
Time on my hands.
Arms dealing Elton John, yeah. Yeah, he literally like pushed the fucking pedal to the metal like he did on the piano and just like took off like post-death, post-mortem.
He really did look like Elton John, like that flashy fucking jacket and the glasses and all that shit.
Mm-hmm. I'm tired of
cocaine the whole time.
I'm tired of music. Here's my final note.
I need a rush. He just fucking flies off and blows up and shit. Yeah, like the first explosion of the series, I want to say.
But more to come.
Oh my God, much more. So anyway, Nirvana is the one that gets away because the police finally show up and Ocho is dead. So they don't have, you know, they don't have their man that's, you know, figuring out what's going on. So they finally get the one dude that got shot in the stomach and he gives them Nirvana's name before he fucking dies. And I had to laugh because the fucking paramedic just looks at him. He's like, oh, no rush on this one. Fucking just covers him up with a fucking blanket.
That's like a common thing in LA, I guess. They just look at a dead body. It's like, oh, well.
Like they see so much of that shit all the time, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh.
Another one.
We got another stiff one here. Bring out your dead.
We're going to need another paramedic.
Can we talk about the fucking scene where so Paul tells Nirvana to this fucking location. Can we please talk about the PCP rage scene? Because holy shit.
Man, he like manhandles everybody, like seriously.
He was going like John Cena. He fucking gave him he gave that one cop like the AA onto the car hood. He just, fucking bounces off. And the one dude flies at him. He just wings him off with one arm. I'm just like, goddamn.
But the thing, like all these cops are trained for like close quarters combat and like certain situations where they're trying to grapple a victim, or not a victim, but a suspect. How is it that like 10 of these cops could not take down a fucking PCP driven madman?
Key phrase, PCP.
I know. But you would think that instead of one at a time, they would be like, oh, take three or four guys onto him.
He's got that police crushing powder.
Police crushing power.
Police crushing power in powder form. It's like a fucking workout supplement. I don't know why I'm going back to the...
It's like some whey protein?
Yeah, like...
But when it happens, it's like no whey protein.
Right, exactly. Like that's how he takes it. He doesn't like snort it. He doesn't like shoot it up or nothing like that. He just fucking mixes it in with like some milk. Probably Paul's milk.
He gets a shaker and just...
Yeah, he breaks in and steals Paul Kersey's milk. He's like, this dude drinks whole milk.
My kind of guy. Put my PCP in here. Fuck.
I thought about the BC Powder commercials. The powder, BC Power. It'd be funny if it was power, PC Powder.
And it's just him like hulking out. Like,
he's got muscles on top of muscles just popping off him. And he's just like, he looks like looks like fucking Lex Luger from like way back in the day when he was all shredded out and shit.
That's power, PC.
Flex Luger. But anyway, they try him after they actually, you know, get him down and arrest him and shit. And he's found criminally insane and they send him off to this mental institution. So what does our boy Paul Kersey do?
Him and Jerry actually go take a visit to the same hospital because Paul is not done. He's far from done.
Paul's never done, my friend.
So he ends up stealing one of the badges off the doctors in the locker room. It's just sitting there. I don't know how, but takes it home and he starts making copies of it and trying to create a interesting name for a doctor that he can be, basically. And he makes a little trip, a house call.
I love before he does that, though, when he fucks up the first one and he goes to throw it. Now, the trash can is literally like right by his foot. He fucking misses. How does this man have like pinpoint accuracy with fucking guns, but he can't see a goddamn thing?
My thing is, he's probably not getting shot at, so therefore the adrenaline is not spiking him to where he can be accurate. So if you shot him during that sequence, he probably would have made it in instantly. He
needs to eat more carrots.
Just shove him in his eyes. Paul Keratin.
Exactly. So yeah, this works, by the way. Makes fake ID. Takes a little visit up to the hospital. Finds a jacket. Slides the card into the little name tag holder. Looks good enough. Looks just like a fucking doctor.
Nobody in LA was going to question this.
Dude, you call the accuracy of that shit, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much probably how it is. So he just walks up to the front desk and he's like, I need to find whatever room this fucker's in. She just, without missing a beat, no, he's in blah, blah, blah. He's in the room, whatever the fuck number it was.
Nobody's questioning this random doctor. It's like, what are you here for? Oh, to see the patient. Why? Instead, it's like, oh, yeah, he's there.
He almost got denied, though, because the one guy that was actually, you know, being basically like security or being a guard for that specific wing of the hospital,
mm-hmm,
almost doesn't let him in. But Paul gives him that good old Charles Bronson convincing. He's just like, look, buddy, I got places to be. I got people to do. Fucking let me in. I'm about it.
Not in that particular tone, but.
Nah, he's just like, let me in. Come on. I suck your dick.
Look at this mustache.
Yeah, look at this mustache. This
isn't it like glorious?
This is the best mustache ride you'll ever have in your life. 25 cents. Let me in.
It's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's like, give me a quarter. Fuck it. Well, so he goes into this room, but which I think is funny because Nirvana is just turned around the whole time. He's not even paying attention to the fact that Paul Curtis is there, and he knows what he looks like. So he gets there, and then as soon as the door shuts and he hears like Paul just drop the clipboard or whatever on the ground, he doesn't even waste any time. He just pulls out, tries to shoot him, and Nirvana just like flips the table up, and they just start fucking fighting. It's really hilarious because I think it would have been a funny shot in this movie. You just cut to the outside of the door, and you just see the door shut, and you just hear them like slamming around. You just hear like fists punching and shit breaking. But goddamn, he kills this motherfucker in the most glorious way possible. But he gets stabbed a shitload of times too.
Oh, yeah. Dude, they freaking shank on him.
God, he shivved the fuck out of his arm. It's always his left arm.
Yep.
Never fails.
Dude comes right back though.
Right? But no, he punches and misses and he fucking puts his arm through like this electrical like board or whatever. And then Paul just turns it on and fries his ass.
Yeah, the electroshock therapy little device.
Yeah. But then the orderly comes in and he just looks at him like, you motherfucker. Yeah, I knew you weren't no fucking doctor.
But he knew who he was.
Yeah, and he's like, I'll give you 3 minutes before I pull the alarm. So he leaves, and unfortunately for Paul, Jerry's already showed up because he at one point has asked her to marry him and run off to, I don't know,
Mexico.
That's right. So she goes home and finds the, you know, all the evidence of him, you know, doing the whole fake ID thing, because it just happens to be on the radio whenever she's looking at this shit. So she takes her engagement ring off and leaves him.
She books it right before he pulls up. Like, it's literally like within seconds. And yeah. It doesn't even show him reacting to that part of the movie. It was just the next scene was the celebration of the radio station or whatever the fuck it was he was designing being done, like being fixed, basically.
Yeah, because we forget he's still an architect throughout all this shit.
Yeah.
And I love it. They're just like, you're going to come to the company party? And he's just like, well, what else would I be doing? And it just, he walks off, which I thought was kind of funny because the way they cast his shadow on the building, I was waiting on him to do the whole Peter Parker thing from Spider-Man 3, just fucking dancing and shit.
Mm-hmm.
They played the music for it. It would be fucking hilarious if it was just Charles Bronson walking around doing the actual Spider-Man fucking dance. He just walks out with all black on. He's just like, going to this fucking company party.
Or just like, yeah, I'm single again.
Back on the prowl. That fucking song plays.
Yep.
Single again. Back on the prowl. I got a mustache and thick eyebrows. Yeah, it's Death Wish 2, goddammit. Really not much to it, honestly. It kind of, you know, it definitely felt like the exact same thing as the first one, except it was his daughter and he actually hunted the people that were responsible down this time. Play spot the difference with this one and the first one, guys. Just do it.
Here at the 500 Section Lounge, we have a few requirements. First, you need to be able to talk about anything at all. Secondly, you need to be able to laugh, play games, and hang out with some very interesting people. From sports radio personalities to reality television contest finalists and everything in between, we talk to them all right here in the lounge. Be on the lookout for what we do next and sit back, relax, and be there to grab a listen.
Let's move on to Death Wish 3. This movie is by far the biggest departure. Like, when you think of it in terms of sequels, it's like, okay, you got the first one. Good setup for all the characters and shit. You got the second one that was, you know, more of a direct follow-up. This one was just like, it could have been a standalone. Because they don't really, you know, they don't really tie it into the other two until, I think, an hour or something into it? This one is back in New York. Same director, Michael Winner. So he goes back to New York after being banned to visit his buddy, Charlie, who served with him in the Korean War. And what happens to his fucking buddy?
He gets killed.
Real, real fucking hard. And it's this whole gang. They just beat the shit out of him, right? And Paul arrives as Charlie dies. So the police automatically think that he fucking did it. Because, you know, that's just how it rolls up there.
Well, I mean, first of all, he had a fucking gun on him. And he was literally there. So it's like, you just set yourself up there, buddy.
Yeah. Well, they take him in, and Richard Schreiker, who's the new police chief, or may have been the original chief of police. I don't remember. I feel stupid if it is. Anyway, the police chief recognizes him as the quote-unquote Mr. Vigilante. Sounds like a wrestling name. I keep bringing wrestling up, but goddamn, it really does sound like a fucking wrestling name here. So, coming down to New York City, Mr. Vigilante, weighing 200 pounds of shit in a 10-pound bag with a hell of a mustache.
Loaded from head to toe.
Yeah, I think he's ditched the Versace cologne and he's gone back to his fucking Stetson / Old Spice ways in this one, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. So to make a long story short about the police scene or whatever, throws him in the holding cell and no charges, no anything like that. And he comes face to face with Fracker, Mr. Nohawk himself, who is the gang leader in this movie. They get into a scuffle in the jail cell. They're separated. Fracker somehow gets out.
All while at the same time he's getting led out of the cell, he makes two open threats to kill someone, and then he leaves. I'm like, dude, how, even with a lawyer, how would you even be able to get out of this situation? Oh, yeah, you got out. Okay, I'm going to kill this old lady for you, and I'm going to kill you. Wait a minute.
Right, and the cops hear all this shit, and they're just kind of like, huh, well, maybe let him do it. Maybe we can get him on something.
Like, isn't that sad? Like, you have to let them do something to get him on something. Like, yeah, we'll let you go and do what you got to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, the dude just looks like trouble in the first place. Like, why the fuck?
This guy, and I swear to God, every time I see his head, he reminds me of a skinny Dennis Hopper from Mario Brothers movie. Because he's
the oh, my God, he does.
He's a skinny Bowser with the freaking hair do that goes, like, on the sides from the top of his head or, like, the front of his head to the back. And he has this red fucking line going from his forehead down the middle to the back of his head. It looks like if you just watch it, it's going to open up like a fucking alien egg or something.
So does that make Charles Bronson Mario because of the mustache?
Mm-hmm.
Come on now.
His power up is milk.
He just fucking grows like a son. He grows two sizes larger.
But a knife will decrease his size.
Upon sight.
Stab wound. Which makes sense of the fucking plunger part.
I forgot about that. God damn it. Yeah. He gets this caseworker that comes in, Catherine Davis, who is telling the police chief, like, he's going to sue you. He's got a case. You can't fucking hold him forever.
And Stryker's response to that was just, he don't give no fucks.
He gives zero fucks. But what I think is hilarious is, like, he has this, like, the light bulb that goes off and above his head. He's like, ding, I have an idea. Ding, fries are done, God damn it.
Yeah, because they were having this little meeting about all the crime increasing in the city. So Stryker was just like, vigilante time.
Yeah, he offers Paul a deal where if he can kill everybody that he wants to and just clean the streets up again as long as he tells Stryker of all the gang activity that he hears about so the police can get, you know, some good news for a change.
Well, they want to get the credit for the bus, basically.
Yeah. So what does Paul do? Somehow, again, we've discussed this. This man is an architect. They didn't bring it up in this movie, but he's still loaded as fuck. This man just goes and stays in his friend's apartment.
The dying words of Charlie were, take care of my stuff before I get back. And he told Benny, one of the neighbors, which is actually a friend of Charlie's from World War II, he gave him the key to his apartment. He's like, yep, the rent is paid for the month. So do what you want for the month.
Let's talk about this apartment in particular. Let's talk about how shitty it is. Like, the area they're in is just gang ridden. It's run down.
It's gangly.
Yes, it is. But I thought it was hilarious, like the fact that you noticed how much nicer on the inside it looks than on the outside.
Yeah, even if you're not a fan of the interior design, like it looks a hell of a lot better than what it looks like on the outside.
I wonder why some of these people are staying where, like, it's like the rent's like stupid cheap there and it looks good. Mm-hmm. They're just willing to put up with all the bullshit from the gangs.
It's like, do I risk my life for cheap rent? I guess so.
Yeah. Because basically what's happening is all these gang members are just letting themselves into these people's apartments and robbing them and torturing them and taking all their food, their money, their weapons, all this shit. And they're just fucking with them the whole time. Old Paul Kersey's all coming to town, though. But I mean, his buddy that he just made, Bennett Cross, who was a World War II vet and was friends of Charlie's or whatever, he makes friends with him. He makes friends with this Jewish couple, the Kaprovs, or the Kaprovs, and then Rodriguez and Maria. Which you kind of get this whole, not an ensemble cast, but you get, you know, it's like, this is the movie where Kersey's like not alone for once.
Right.
So let's talk about the way he starts to clean up around here. So he goes to dinner, and before that he's bought a car, and they're like, what's with the car?
It's bait.
Yeah, that's bait. But I laugh because I think this might have been the first actual like Kersey kill of the film. Your face was priceless, dude. Whatever the fucking car scene.
Yeah, because two of the gang members were like stealing shit from the car. And they're like, what's up with you? What's your problem? He's like, it's my car.
Yeah. It's like, what are you doing to the car? Well, what's it to you? It's my car.
Yeah.
And just, I love how they're like, well, you're fixing it. You finna die. No. And he just shoots the fuck out of both of them and just walks off like it's nothing. That's mm-hmm. the best fucking thing about this movie is there is no expression on this man's face anytime something happens that is drastic. Like, I don't know if that's just, you know, by this point, Bronson's phoning the goddamn performance in, but...
I mean, look what the man's been through. I mean, he's pretty hardened from trauma at this point.
Right. And I mean, yeah, being a war vet, he probably does. But still, dude, it's like, maybe he's just having fun with it at this point. He ever hadn't really stopped to think about that.
And his response to all that was like, I'm sending a message.
Maria has been attacked twice already by the gangs, but then she is sexually assaulted. Oh, God, this is getting old. And dies in the hospital after getting her arm broken because the doctor's just like, well, you see, it was just a broken arm, but it might have released some blood clots that clogged her arteries and her heart just failed. We're sorry. Poor fucking Rodriguez, dude. That motherfucker there. That poor son of a bitch. So he just orders it. He's like, you know what? My friend Wildly's coming to town.
And everybody questioned that. Who's Wildly? Is he fast enough to catch the giggler? Because that was like another like running gag, literally.
Yeah.
Was one of the gang members was called the giggler. Because every time he would mug somebody, he would run so fucking fast and he would,
and I ran, ha, 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 ha.
So they're like, is your friend Wiley going to be able to catch him? He's like, oh yeah, just you wait.
I feel like they should have put pumped up kicks right there. Let's remaster this and put pumped up kicks right there.
Mm-hmm. You imagine like back then they had Converse, Paul Kersey had Converse.
Paul Conversey.
Mm-hmm. Controversy.
Exactly. But that's like his shoe of choice. He's just wearing like loafers and shit throughout this. Like, how the fuck? Let's talk about that for a second.
The man's a murderer of class.
Yeah, he is. He dresses just so homely and just so everyday. Like he dresses like an old man should.
Yeah, he's like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Mr. Rogers' Hood.
Yeah. That's another thing too. Like this film was so fucking funny for that particular reason. It was... When there's no violence, it was literally like the Golden Girls of old people. They're just like talking about old people stuff the entire fucking time. And then shooting, killing, bad stuff happens. Oh yeah, by the way, my hemorrhoids blew up again. Oh no, I had that happen to me last month. You know what I used?
I used Aspa cream.
They see, you know, it's like, oh, I got stabbed.
That would be a funny conversation. You know, my hemorrhoids just blew up the other day and it was just nasty and leaky and gross. Paul, how's the soup?
Soup is great.
My soup. But anyway, Wildly is a fucking goddamn Desert Eagle style looking fucking gun. It is a goddamn hand cannon, okay?
With big game caliber bullets that are like half the size. Like, it's strong.
Right? Because there's one scene in particular where Bennett's like, oh, you're loading your own ammo? Nothing's too good for our friends. Goddamn, dude. You know shit's about to get real when Paul Kersey starts building his own ammunition.
Dude, this gun is as big as his fucking head. Almost.
If any of you guys listening to this on YouTube see the poster for this on the opposite side of Death Wish 2, like, you can see this fucking gun. It's goddamn large. So, Paul devises a plan to catch the giggler.
Fucking name.
I know, I can't even fucking say it with a straight face. Like, my cheeks are just, like, hurting from smiling at that shit. It's just so dumb. So here's his plan. He's going to get, you know, the All-American ice cream bar. He's like, you know what? I'm going to the store for some ice cream.
And how he does it was fucking funny. He carries around his, like, what is it, Nikon camera bag.
Mm-hmm.
And just flings it around, you know, just going to town. And they catch wind, and they look at it, and old fucking giggler is like...
He pops a boner looking at it. He's just like...
Just takes off down after Kersey after he's eaten his ice cream bar, just yanks it out of his hand, and here comes old Wilder. Pow! Just a fucking, I mean, it's like literally like 3-inch wide, maybe 4-inch wide hole of just open wound.
Drew Brees could toss a fucking football through that bitch, dude.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a tire. Like they fucking practice throwing footballs through the tire. It's like a hole that fucking big.
Yeah.
And I love like it just cuts there. He just walks away and the whole neighborhood just cheering him on out of their windows. And then the very next day, the whole gang is just sitting down. They're just like, they killed the giggler, man. The giggler. They killed the giggler, man. Oh my God. Sound like John Travolta. Oh my God. They killed the giggler.
That woman that fucking like freaks out is like, yeah, he stole my pocketbook 3 weeks ago. I'm glad he's dead.
You dirty son of a bitch.
Where were y'all whenever this happened?
Right?
Like, this old lady was pissed at the fucking cops.
Can we talk about when he had old boy and tossed him off the fucking roof onto that car?
Oh, jeez, yeah.
Plain as day, dummy. Like, plain as day, fucking stuffed dummy. Doing the Jesus Christ pose the whole fucking way down.
Yeah, just imagine, like, Gary's Mod T-posing, just whoop.
It's a long drop, too. Like, until they panned out, I didn't realize how far of a drop that he threw him from.
It was, like, 3 or 4 floors up, maybe?
Yeah, he just lands on a taxi cab. But yeah. The way that he... Oh, my God, dude.
Yeah, he lands close... Okay, so the cab is facing the road, and the building's on the right side of the cab. He lands feet first into the cab, and his body goes towards the building. Well, whenever the cops get there, his body's facing the other side of the car, literally hanging over it. And I'm just like, how?
Movie magic.
Who touched the body before we got here?
Someone moved it. I know they did.
Because it was not like this before we got here.
Let's talk about the public defender that just hits on Kersey.
Y'all, come on. This chick meets him in the fucking precinct day one. Suddenly interested in this guy. Gave him her number. Said, hey, if you just need anything in general, let me know. Finds him at the apartment, wondering how the fuck she found him. She just has her ways. And bribes him with dinner. Or like, not bribes him, but literally just like makes him feel guilty for not having dinner with her. It's like, I don't want to be alone with all the muggers around, so can you just have dinner with me?
Sure.
How about Friday? Yeah, that's fine. Friday's good. It's like, bruh, you met this man in the fucking jail.
It's the cologne, dude. I swear to God.
You don't know what this man is capable of. Why the hell he was tossed into jail in the first place, even if it was unconstitutional. You still flirt with this man. Like, hell, why don't you just go into the fucking precinct and just like, who should I date today?
Yeah, but it works.
1980s.
He gets some.
Yeah, after the whole chicken.
That's right. Because she's going to cook dinner for him or some shit. And she's like, I hope you like chicken. That's all I know how to cook. Or is that what she said? Like, that's all I know how to cook?
I made chicken. That's all I know how to make. I like chicken. Chicken's good.
Right? Just the way he says it, though, is funny.
He doesn't break expression.
No, he just stares at her like, yeah, squinty-eyed with his mustache. His mustache actually probably talked to her instead of his lips. He's just like, I like chicken. Chicken's good.
Speaking of viewing, there was that scene when they were chasing the giggler before he got killed. And it would break away to, like, I would call it Bronson vision because the film quality was, like, grainy as fuck because you see right behind the giggler, and it would only do that 2 times. The rest of the film was clear. So I was like, man, this is what happens after all these murders that an old man, like, does. It just, he gets, like, this film grain in his vision.
He's, like, right on his tail. Right on, oh, shit, I can't see him. Where'd he go? Fuck.
But yeah, this man can freaking sniper shot with a fucking handgun.
Dude, right? What I was saying earlier, like, the dude can't see shit, but he's a fucking expert marksman. So let's move forward with the whole, you know, the Catherine saga here. So they fuck, and she's, you know, leaving town. She wants to leave town and go visit her family or whatever.
Her sister that she hates.
Yeah. So we forgot to mention that Paul Kersey has, in the meantime, as far as, aside from staying in this apartment, he's purchased a P.O. box at the post office that he just fucking mail orders weaponry through. Like, oh, what the fuck, dude? You know this is the 80s. Like, you can't fucking really, like, the kind of weaponry that this man is ordering. You cannot just fucking do this shit.
I mean, not only that, I didn't think they would mail packages bigger than the mailbox itself unless they would send them to the post office. Because these boxes were clearly bigger than the actual P.O. box itself.
Right?
So, how... Dude, I don't think they hold them at the where the P.O. boxes are, huh?
Yeah, I mean, if it's a special delivery, they get handed over the counter or whatever. But just the fact that he's just mail ordering fucking
arms,
rocket launchers and shit like that.
Yep.
Because he has. He's ordered all this shit or whatever. And before that, before we get to the particular scene that kind of sets off the rest of this film.
Particular set of scenes.
Yeah, that's it. Remember when Bennett shows him the old fucking hand cannons that he's got in his goddamn armoire? No, dude, it was funny. Sets off a chain in motion.
A chain gun motion.
Exactly. All the zoom ins and shit, too.
He opens up this armoire and shows him this old Browning like machine gun. I forget the exact caliber, but the way they show it is basically if I were to take my drink right now, and as soon as I pick it up, literally shove it in your face. Look at this thing right here. Like all you can see is the one letter on the freaking drink side. That's how close the camera got to the gun. Like all I saw was like part of the stock of it, basically.
I'd get a good look at it. That's the Bronson vision. That's another Bronson vision.
He's like gun.
So you already know that this weapon's going to get used. Like there's just no getting around it at this point. So he goes to the post office because they're going to go to dinner. Catherine and Paul are going to go to dinner. And he's like, I got to pick up something at the post office. Will you wait right here? She's like, sure. And they're all in love and flirty and all this other bullshit. Well, he goes in. Well, here comes Fracker and one of the other gang members. Oh my God. Just.
Yeah. Just like knuckle punch her in the fucking forehead.
Real hard.
Knock her out. Take the emergency brake off and just let her roll downhill.
This car was a goddamn tank because it collides with another vehicle on the bottom of the hill, splits that fucker in two, and then just...
So, note to self, the Paul Kersey curse is real.
Kersey.
Because any woman that gets close to Kersey dies. Except for one.
She was smart and ran.
But let's not forget my interpretation of 60-year-old Kevin McAllister, the Home Alone parts.
Let's talk about those.
So there was a sequence in the apartment where he saw, I mean, whoever walks like this, they must have like a hops in their step or something because they're literally like spaced out to where it's like maybe a couple inches apart. There's no like actual walking, but the footprints in his apartment. And he's like, I got an idea. He nails this fucking, I guess it's like a cabinet door or some kind of like door in general with a bunch of broken ass nails sticking up. And he lays it out flat onto the actual floor underneath the window where the supposed person is crawling into. Well, he ends up coming home one day and he sees that there's blood on the floor and he sees that his trap worked. Well, the next shot is one of the members like, man, I got hurt, you know?
Yeah, he's got like this makeshift 2x4 as a crutch, and his foot is sticking through the tongue top of his Converse sneaker, all bandaged up. And I love it because Fracker just kind of looks at him. He's just like, you pussy.
You dumb shit.
You fucking twat.
But the second one was probably my favorite one, minus the use of it later on. But he gets contacted by the Kaprovs. Because they keep breaking in and shit like that through this one window where there was one moment where they broke in, they harassed them. And one of the guys is like, we come here anytime we want. Like just laughing and shit. Anytime. Well, Paul makes this like catapult contraption and it's literally basically like watching Home Alone at this point. It's like a mousetrap.
Yeah, pretty much.
And when they open the window, the freaking lever pops and like slaps the person in the forehead or in the face.
It's kind of like when Chevy Chase was walking the beams in Christmas Vacation and kept fucking stepping on the plywood and popping him right in the face.
Bitch slapping him. Yep.
Yep.
Well, it worked because the same guy came back and two front teeth were on top of the board, like stuck in the board. So they're talking about a 5'6" Latino man with two missing front teeth.
When you were talking about how he needs the chiclets like Mr. Wilson in,
mm-hmm.
It would be funny. They cut to the next scene. Like they cut to the one dude with his foot all fucked up, right? That one happens. And then they cut to the gang scene again. He's just sitting there and he's got the chiclets shoved where his teeth were. And they took my teeth, man. Fucking board took my fucking teeth. Just two oversized giant fucking chiclets just shoved in place.
Classic.
After the love of his 3 or 4 day life tragically explodes.
The last 30 minutes of love, yeah.
Right? Paul just is like, it's wabbit season, goddammit.
It's gangbango season.
Yeah, so he goes and visits Bennett in the hospital because at this point he's put in police custody for protection because they're like, okay, he's in the like a little too deep here.
Well, Bennett being in the hospital, what happened there? So
yeah.
He got fucking fed up with this shit, all right? So he threatens all the gang members that are outside of the apartment with the fucking one of the machine guns, not the main one. He gets one of the other ones he had in his armoire and just goes outside. He tries to blast everybody. It doesn't work. They pretty much corral around him and throw him over. It was like two floors up from the bottom floor onto the concrete.
Right.
How does this man don't die? I don't know.
Because the reason he did this is because they blew up his taxi shop. Because he's yelling, "My shop," but it sounds like he's going, "My soup!
My soup!
My soup!
I left it on the oven and it exploded."
Dude, this building blew up at least a good three times.
That's some spicy soup.
I know. He's like, "I like it hot. I like it so hot that I..." "My goddamn taste buds."
Explosion of flavor.
Right. But yeah, so Kersey is in, you know, a holding cell, and they basically tell him, okay, you know, you can be let out because Bennett wants to talk to you. And, you know, that's the only way he's going to, you know, talk to anybody is if they, you know, let you go see him.
Right.
So he talks to him, but then Bennett is just like, "Yeah, get out of here." Lets him escape through the window. And, you know, of course, Richard's pissed because he's just like, "Ah, you let him go." So this is where the movie picks up. So he meets Rodriguez because, you know, he's wanting revenge too. They go to his apartment and they just, dude, they start just unpacking all this weaponry. And this is where the final fucking showdown happens over the next like 20 minutes. It is a goddamn glorious ballet of bullets and fucking bombs and bodies and people. Just Jesus Christ.
What we like to call Jerry action.
It's a Jerry action film.
Literally like the neighborhood squads up against the gang. Bronson has his fucking RPG. Loaded and ready to go. He gets the fucking Browning machine gun that's hidden away in the armoire and just starts chasing all these people out in the streets. People are throwing Molotovs and grenades everywhere. And even at one point, Flacker is like, "Okay, look, I got to get fucking more people on my turf." So he does 1-800, you know, dollar thug.
He calls the gangster party hotline.
And he gets more people to ride up on his turf to defend his turf against fucking Bronson and the, you know, the geriatrics.
Jesus.
Geriatrics.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say the same shit.
But yeah, Rodriguez and Bronson, whatever.
It's all the same.
Kersey and Rodriguez literally just mow fuckers down.
Dude, his face, because he has to have Rodriguez hold the fucking bullet chain.
Right.
While he's firing this fucking thing. His every time he fires it off, there's so many zoom ins. Okay, like I mentioned that a little bit earlier, like the start of all the zoom ins. There are so many fucking zoom ins during this entire action sequence. He turns around, he's like, zoom in on his face. It looks like he's got to take a shit.
Like if you literally just thought of something that was like just tragic or like dire, and he's just here, like that's just him. He ain't flinching or nothing.
He's going. Yeah. Again, his jowls are moving.
This bulldog is angry. How do you know? His jowls are flapping.
His jowls are flapping. He is pissed. But he eventually runs out of ammo. I like the little gun that Rodriguez has, like a little zip gun. It looks like this little tube that he when he clicks it together, it fires off like a big fucking bullet round.
Yeah, it's like a shotgun show.
Yeah. And anyway, they all run out of ammunition, right? Because they've killed damn near everybody they can. But there's a lot of other people fighting back too. Like the one scene that I had you rewind because... This dude tries to break into this chick's house and she just, she screams, runs up and just blows him out of the building with a shotgun.
Which her face did not even emote that scream. It was just like her like almost shitting her pants in fucking anger and just hear the,
I just love the sound he makes because she shoots him and you just hear, oh, he just topples out. Colonel Sanders,
yep.
Waterboy. But he just crashes through the window and he just fucking topples out. God damn. We forgot to mention Alex Winter from Bill and Ted and a lot of other things, but most notably for Bill and Ted. Alex Winter is the actor in this movie who made his start in, you know, a movie like this and went to bigger places.
Mm-hmm.
That poor bastard, he gets shot and just fucking face plants onto the ground.
But death spared him and Bill and Ted.
Yes, literally. Became friends with death and Bill and Ted.
Yep.
Excellent. But no, they run out of ammo, and in the midst of all the gang fighting, Fracker just looks over and he sees him, and he's just like, "Got you now, bitch." And he follows him, which I forgot. Richard finds everybody too, the police chief, and he's out there gunning fuckers down with him. And you know, Paul saves him. And he's like, "I owe you one, dude." Well, they go to the apartment. Fracker's about to gun down Paul, and Richard kicks the fucking door open, and he shoots at Fracker and shoots him down. But then he gets shot in the arm. and Fracker seemingly has died. They do that classic zoom in on his eyes where his eyes open and you just hear the musical cue ding, and you're like, oh, fucking really?
Then he reveals, the body armor.
Bulletproof asshole, just like yours. And it's like, dude, my asshole's not bulletproof. I don't know what you fucking heard, but it's not. I'm Charles Bronson, but I mean, there's some softness to me.
My snuggles.
And I'm going to have you describe the best part of this fucking entire goddamn movie, because I've seen this one several fucking times and it gave me great joy knowing that you had no idea what was coming and then it happened, because they kind of set it up a little bit like early on, but you forget what's hidden.
Yeah. I mean, the chief asks, like, you can't get us both. And he's like, oh, maybe I can. Well, fucking Kersey just yoinks this rocket launcher that was hidden behind this nightstand, and fucking Fracker is just, oh shit face, like zoomed in and just blew his ass out the fucking side of the apartment.
Dude, point fucking blank. Let's talk about the distance between the two of these sons of bitches, dude. There couldn't have been more than like 7 feet between them.
I would say there's some social distancing right there.
Dude, how did it not fucking blow them all out of the apartment? You know what I'm saying?
Not only that, how did the body stay intact? I mean, it was charred and it was, you know, bones, but still it was intact.
It was just like a pile of fucking burning mush on the ground.
There was this chick in the gang that was, I guess, Fracker's girlfriend or plaything, whatever. When that explosion happened, she immediately freaked out like she knew Fracker died, but had no idea it was him. Like, I'm still kind of lost about how Cyndi Lauper there just, like, lost her shit for no fucking reason.
Cyndi lost her.
Yeah, lost her. Lost her man. Yeah, all the gang members, like, crowded around the body. It was literally just a bag Thanksgiving turkey on fire. And one of the guys, like, lifts this, like, bike chain ready to slap around these fucking old people. And the girl's just like, no, we're gone. And they all take off.
Yeah, they just basically realize, oh, we fucking lost.
Yeah. You know, the one person that, you know, was the biggest badass of us all is gone. So what the fuck are we going to do?
Yeah. And then Stryker basically looks over at Kersey and he's just like, I'll give you a head start, buddy. And the movie just ends with Kersey with his bags intact, just walking off.
The same way he introed himself, he outroed. He just walks in with baggage. He walks out with baggage.
It's kind of like the Incredible Hulk. You know what I mean? Like the TV series where he's just like, you know, walking away, sad Bruce Banner walking away or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This is fucking satisfied Charles Bronson, like, you know, go fuck up another town.
More debts under my belt.
More deaths.
My death debt.
Right. But yeah, that's Death Wish 3. And, you know, I mentioned this to Cody before we, you know, started recording this. And I swear to God, I'm not even being biased because I really like this one, but I really feel like this one takes the cake this week just because of the fucking over the top action that happened.
We already are in unison.
There's no fucking way Death Wish 2 stood a chance against this one. I mean, honestly, there's no fucking way Death Wish 2 stood a chance against most of these films in this franchise, because I hate to admit it, even though it was a direct sequel, it felt boring. You know, I mean, yeah, it's your, you know, typical revenge tale again, but this one dared to be a little different. And they're like, oh, let's take this character who's just a hard-boiled fucker now and use his talents, you know, and make it work for the police force and clean up the streets in this little fucking area. But just the way they did it was really well done. A lot of people pan the fuck out of this movie, but this one absolutely has like the biggest following out of the entire franchise for good reason. So I swear to God, by a long landslide, this God, this one just fucking wins.
Yeah, I think at the beginning of this, we kind of already agreed like unanimously in our minds.
Yeah, and again, there is a reason. Like, I own a collection where I have got all five of these films on DVD. This is the only one of the original five that got a Blu-ray remaster from a company from the 2K negative restoration. I bought this. Like, if I'm going to go out of my way to spend more money than I should have to on any of these, it's definitely going to be this one. And well worth the fucking price of admission. So if you out there would love to check both of these movies out, I do believe they're on Amazon Prime. You can probably find them streaming somewhere. I would seek these out. They're always a good time. Fucking do it. Death Wish 3 is your winner this week on Cult Cinema Showdown, and it will go on to face the winner of Death Wish 4, The Crackdown, versus Death Wish 5, The Face of Death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck. Those two are pretty on par. They have some moments, but we'll get to those when we do. Next week, We're going to take a look at the Bruce Willis 2018 Death Wish remake. I mean, it's a remake. I don't know how well it's going to hold up against the original, but you know, we'll see when we get there. And that's that.
Yeah. There's not much to that.
Right.
Just more Death Wish.
It's Bald Kersey this time. It's not Paul Kersey. It's Bald Kersey.
Mm-hmm.
Check us out on social media. The show notes below has all the good shit. Check us out on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel. Go follow all the other shows on the Odd Pods Media Network. Buy something from us. I mean, I don't fucking care.
Just throw money at us.
Throw it. Like a fucking football through the giggler's hole in his back.
Just a shot from the Wilder.
Right? When you buy one of our t-shirts or jackets or whatever, giggle as you run away from the mailbox with it.
And then have it like shot onto your body just instantly.
We will send Charles Bronson's corpse with his Desert Eagle to your house to fire it out onto your body. We can't really guarantee it, but...
we can't guarantee it's going to be actually Charles Bronson's corpse, but we can probably do like a blow-up doll with his face on it or something.
Dude, could you... Oh my God. Like, he becomes such a sex symbol from these movies that some company out there is just like, hey, we gotta recreate like a blow-up doll with Charles Bronson's likeness.
But I mean, it's going to be like Stetson-flavored like latex smell. That's the sex appeal. Stetson scented for your pleasure.
Charles Stetson Bronson. Okay, so I know we didn't do this last time. What cologne do you think he really wore for this one? Like Death Wish 3, come on. Like, which cologne did he wear throughout this one?
Obsession.
Fuck yeah. Obsession for Men by Calvin Klein.
Yep. Because this man is obsessed with death.
Yeah, he is. You want to get the fuck out of here, dude?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we've got more movies to fucking watch for this month, and holy shit, more cologne references to make, more fucking body counts, hopefully more explosions, more bullshittery.
Well, it's like you said, the mustache wars, Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, Attack of the Clones. The Cologne Wars.
What are they attacking, your senses?
Yeah. That was episode 154. Cult Cinema Showdown 64, Death Wish 2 versus Death Wish 3. Until next week, I've been Midnight Agent Raw.
And I'm Will Cumming.
Spray it on.
We're smelly.